The opinions voiced on this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, or financial advisor prior to investing. Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC.
Today, a lot of people are asking, what the heck is Brexit and why should we care? Well, it's a Sunshine Friday on the Peter McClellan Show, and Jeff Hyback is back. We start now.
It's sunshine.
And welcome to the Peter McClellan Show. This is your host, Peter McClellan. And it seems like it's been forever, but we are once again joined by Jeff Hyback of Strategic Equity Management. Jeff is a active money manager who is very much on top of these issues that are occurring today. And some of you may be wondering, you know, you heard the news, the market was down 3.5%. What's going on? Why the big drop, 600 points on the Dow? Awful day. Why all the concern over Britain leaving this monetary union? So, Jeff, first of all, welcome back. It's always fun to do these podcasts with you. You know, tell people in a nutshell, what is this Brexit? What does it mean that the Great Britain has left, the EU? Why should anybody be so concerned about it?
Yeah, I guess I picked a good week to come back. But by the way, let me just say, I downloaded all your podcasts while I was gone, and you did a phenomenal job, but I don't think our listeners wanted one of you explaining what Brexit is, so... Good timing.
No, they don't.
On our part.
Absolutely not. Yeah, good time. Very good timing. I wouldn't want to. Yeah. I agree. No.
Anybody that missed your podcast the last few weeks, so I'd encourage them to download them. I found the app on the iPhone. You can actually download them and listen to them offline, so you're not burning through your data. So anyways, it's funny. We unplugged last week for our family vacation and mind us hopping in. I cheated a little bit on Wednesday. Everybody was taking naps, and I got paid $5 for painfully slow 15 minutes of internet access to listen to the Fed. And one of the things that they said when they didn't raise rates was they were concerned about the outcome of what they called Brexit. And, you know, as you said, that's the voters in Great Britain voting to leave the European Union. And, you know, I actually enjoyed not having my phone, not having internet access. And I think my wife enjoyed me not having it too, but last night I bet she did. Just a side note, my son-in-law, who is a big time techie, when we got back to Miami and started getting phone service again, my daughter goes, "Hey, great news. Dustin has internet access on his phone again."
Great. Yeah. This is wonderful. This is like we can drink water again.
Yeah. No. Right. But anyways, that was her sarcastic remark. But so Brady and I just thought, you know, it'd been a hectic week of coming back to work, and we escaped for a quick little coffee date last night, and my phone just starts, you know, buzzing, and I'm like, you know, normally I just ignore it, but it kept going off. I'm like, well, no, what if it's the kids? And I saw all the alerts. It's like, and it was really the unthinkable, because if you looked at all the polls this week, it looked like voters were going to, you know, as the analysts would say, they'd, you know, act rationally and they would vote to stay in the European Union. And I started seeing these alerts that said, you know, the Leave campaign has won. Dow futures down at the time 750 points. S&P futures were down 5%. The pound was getting destroyed. Like, well,
and this was, I mean, there really was a consensus maybe across the boards on Wall Street here that this wasn't going to happen, right? Because earlier in the week there was this, you know, nice rally based on the idea that it looked like, oh yeah, it's not a big deal, they're going to have their vote and everything will just continue as is, right? That was kind of the mindset.
Exactly. And so, you know, I audibly reacted and I said, I can't believe this happened. And my wife Brandy goes, what are you talking about? And so I'll explain to our listeners how I explained it to her. First of all, we got to realize there's a European Union, and then there's a European Monetary Union. And the European Union, when it was put together, was, you know, essentially a very broad trade agreement, but it had rules in place as far as, you know, border movement, immigration, some of the laws and labor laws and things like that in order to be part of this union. But it really opened the borders in the EU. Think of NAFTA, but in a much more liberal scale. But then they had the European Monetary Union, which was the common currency. And back when this began in the mid to late 1990s, it was supposed to be the be-all, end-all solution to this. You know, all the professors when I was in school, you know, said this is the beginning of globalization. Pretty soon we're going to have the, you know, the North American Union, where we get Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. into one common currency, right, and on and on and on. And so what's happened, though, is the people in the UK have felt restricted by some of the laws that were required to remain in the European Union. And I think they began in 2013 pushing for a referendum. And finally, David Cameron, their prime minister, agreed to put it on the ballot. And it was a very, very ugly campaign, similar to what we've seen here in the U.S. with, you know, on the Republican side with Trump against everybody else. And then on the Democrat side, the Sanders versus Clinton thing. It is, you know, things, right, you didn't think would happen on the campaign trail were happening. And so we saw this similar thing. And what it means, first of all, is it's not all of a sudden now the UK is no longer part of the European Union. There's a, I think it's called Article 50 of the agreement, allows them to choose to leave, but it's a two-year process where the United Kingdom has a chance to renegotiate their trade agreements, immigration agreements, things like that. It's not as big of a deal as if they were, say, Greece, who was part of the euro. Britain has always kept their currency independence. They still have the pound. All it is now they have to figure out what they're going to do on trade agreements, and as well as, you know, immigration and things like that. And, you know, so we got time for that. But it's so unlikely that this massive thing would start to crumble. You know, Great Britain is, you know, really one of the key drivers. And I know the people that constructed the EU have been pushing for them to adopt the euro, and now they're not going to even be part of the EU. So it truly is a game changer in the whole scheme of things of this move towards globalization.
Okay. So what would you say would be, you know, the reason why so much of the world is so, you know, on a short-term basis, has such concerns? What does it mean for us, and what might it mean for the other parts of Europe?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the short-term concerns evolve around the economy. The UK economy has been doing decently well, but the European economy has been struggling and kind of teetering on the verge of heading back into recession. The European Central Bank's done all these things to try to boost things. They're even buying corporate debt now, trying to get their economy going. And whenever you have uncertainty entering the things, I mean, we were talking to a mutual fund where they have a big presence over in Europe, and they said even though they're in the eurozone, they were looking to buy pounds just to have some sort of an extra currency. The dollar was, you know, had one of its best day in years today because there's demand for dollars. So whenever you have that uncertainty in as far as what's going to happen economically, that even it's kind of a snowball rolling down the hill, where the more things slow down, the more apprehensive people become as far as investing in new projects. And so Europe going back into a recession is probably a pretty high likelihood. Also short term, and to me this is the bigger thing, and you know, maybe it's me having to learn from the CFA stuff what derivatives actually are. Maybe it's my accounting background or the fact that I came from the banking industry. But today's move was what they call almost a black swan. And all of you that took statistics classes, you know, even the general high school ones, or you've seen a bell curve where that's a normal distribution of results. These models that the Wall Street banks use and the London-based banks and all the European banks use, as far as predicting asset prices, kind of determine that things stay normal. Well, the move just today in the currency market was 10 standard deviations above anything you would normally expect, which is almost unheard of. And then the move just in interest rates was a 4 to 5 standard deviation event. Well, these banks are able to take their excess money and buy derivatives. So they can get exposure to, you know, say if you're in London, you can get exposure to the German markets. Or if you're in Germany, you could try to hedge your position, you know, your U.S. positions by taking derivative positions there. Well, they're all
also putting like, well, like you said, the Germans are strong, but this putting more pressure on Spain, Italy, France, Greece, Portugal. Wow. I mean, they're already under a lot of pressure, are they not?
Yeah. According to the cycle, which you and I started doing, unfortunately, mm-hmm. because right. of storage issues, we weren't able to keep those yeah. podcast archives. But we started doing a social cycle podcast back in 2010. And this was just the beginning, because like you said, it's an 18 to 20, well, it's an overall 80 to 90 year cycle, but each period lasts 18 to 22 years. And we're not quite wow. sure until we're well into wow. it, where the beginning of the what they call the crisis stage began. But what we're seeing is the characteristics of the last 10 years for sure of the social mood, both in the U.S. as well as overseas. You just, one of the characteristics that you see in what they call the crisis stage is institutions that were previously mm-hmm. trusted yeah. and valued are basically torn down or burned down. And we've talked about it before, you know, with the U.S. election, the Republican Party, as we know it, is basically gone. Either they're going to try to not have the person that won the primary vote, Donald Trump, on the ballot, which will just destroy the party, in my opinion, because of such a big revolt of going against what the people think. Or you're going to see the Republican leadership have to totally reform and start paying attention to some of those more moderate voters. And on the same side, the Democrat side, this whole superdelegate thing is becoming into focus. And, you know, I think that's an issue for a lot of the Hillary Clinton supporters. And we hear people saying, you know, why vote for her, you know, when she's just an establishment, you know, big business type candidate. So things that you didn't think 5 years ago were possible start to happen. And you know, we see it with, you know, celebrities and, you know, everything. The people are angry. And they're angry because you look at the average household income adjusted for inflation, we're back to the early 1980s levels. The economy is not keeping up for the average American, the average British person, the average European. They're all looking at the government and blaming them for it, which is perfectly normal. It happens every 80 or 90 years. And then how we handle it determines how ugly it gets before we get to a place to rebuild. Because we've talked for the last 6 years now about how unsustainable the debt levels are, the entitlements, the way we're spending our money is just ridiculous. We're not investing it in future projects. We're investing it to pay back our other debt. You know, from the government to corporations, that's the big concern is, you know, is this just the beginning? Is this election going to be the one where the Republican Party is torn down or the Democratic Party is torn down? And then what emerges from that rubble? You know, what's going to emerge from the rubble of the European Union? Who steps up to lead it? That there's so many unknowns there that's what happened. And if you go back through the past crisis stages, and this is why we've talked about it for so long, is, you know, the last crisis was the Great Depression and World War II. Prior to that was the Civil War. Prior to that was the Revolutionary War. Prior to that, you go back, is when we started to see the revolution in the United Kingdom, where it led people to come over to the U.S. So it's in our blood to do this about every 80 or 90 years. And it's just kind of that human nature of the way things tend to play out. We got to realize everybody's emotional and we tend to react to similar circumstances the same way over and over again. And right now we're to that anger stage where so many people feel left out that there's just saying, you know, I don't care how ugly it gets, I want to change. And that's essentially what, if you listen to the people that voted to leave the European Union, are saying in the UK. I think the global economy, we said at the beginning of the year, was 80 or 90% likely to enter a recession this year. This puts it probably close to 100%. If we see a 1 or 2 month slowdown over in the European Union, they're going to be in a recession. No. But the U.S. economy is still kind of puttering along. It's not great. But we saw things last week while I was gone, building permits and housing starts are still chugging along. The manufacturing sector is struggling a little bit, but employment, even with the bad number we saw for May employment, it's still good. The jobless claims numbers that we've seen show that not a lot of people are being laid off. Wages are increasing in the U.S. So I don't, the worst bear markets always occur just before and during a recession. And for the U.S. markets, I don't see that happening yet. And I have barring a major failure of a large bank, whether it's Deutsche Bank or UBS or something else where they have Federal Reserve exposure because they have operations in the U.S., I don't see this sparking a U.S. recession unless all the multinational corporations just get scared and stop spending money. But right now, it's kind of a non-event. You look at where the market's at, and it's fallen back to its 200-day moving average, which isn't a horrible place. We were back here March 24th. So, the market's given back some of the gains, but we have to keep in mind that, when March began, we were sitting about 200 points lower on the S&P, which is significant. Yeah. That's about a 10% move. So it's, what I always tell people, in situations like this, especially going into a weekend, I've had family members and friends say, well, what do I do? I said, are you still a long-term investor? Yes. Are you still dollar cost averaging? Yes. Nothing. Maybe it'll hit, when your monthly deposit hits, it'll be at a lower point. Maybe it won't. I mean, that's really the thing. You got to step back and say, is my risk tolerance the same? Are my objectives the same? If so, this is really a non-event. If it's not, say you were stretching, say you were chasing the market. Now you got to kind of watch it and consider, well, maybe this is the start of something that, 9-10 months down the road, we might be heading towards a recession. Yeah. I'm still significantly off the lows from the end of March. Mm-hmm. The beginning of March. Maybe it's a time to lighten up. Maybe, Monday we get a bounce or Tuesday and then you want to reconsider. Mm-hmm. But if your risk tolerance and objectives have not changed, if you're positioned the way you should be as far as all of those things, it's a non-event. And that's why you just take a deep breath in days like this and say, well, maybe, if I'm a client of the 401k latte company, it's I need to get in and get an appointment and determine if I'm in the right portfolio. But it's not something where you need to rush out and make drastic changes. Mm-hmm. At the same point, it's not a reason to just jump in and buy. We see a lot of people that, oh gosh, I really missed out on the market. This is a buying opportunity. It may not be that buying opportunity. You got to really look at it from your overall portfolio perspective and say, if I didn't belong in stocks 20% ago, I probably don't belong in them now. You don't change your objectives based on how much the market's up or down. You change them based on your life and what's going on right now.
I'd say this too, if you've not explored the merits of active money management, it's something to consider. And in fact, it's times like this that I'm just very grateful for the ability of systems that become more defensive if it's needed, if it's needed. And it might be. We don't know yet. So, at the 401k Latte Company, we what is it, Jeff? We have the tagline, and I always ask you because I know you know what it is. What is it we tell people?
To invest in a conversation.
And do it soon.